Good morning and welcome to another episode of Radio Wild, hosted on the first Monday of every month. Today's, well, Monday, and it's May the 4th, so for all of you Star Wars fans out there, May the 4th be with you. We've got an exciting episode lined up for you today. It's actually a rather unique one. We're going to actually extend the time a little bit because the topics that we're going to be discussing are actually rather important and something we feel that we need to generate a little more awareness on, be a little more enlightened on ourselves, and be able to discuss what is going on here in the Pacific Northwest in terms of large carnivores on the landscape. Today, we have a very dynamic duo that will be talking with us. They both work at Western Wildlife Outreach, which was formerly known as the Grizzly Bear Outreach Project, for those of you who may know it by that name. But it's going to be a really, really interesting show. We're going to talk about large carnivores here in the Pacific Northwest. That includes grizzly bears, mountain lions, or cougars, and gray wolves. So you don't want to miss that. So we'll be talking with them here very shortly. But first, we want to recognize our sponsors for the day. Today's episode is also going to be brought to you in part by Western Wildlife Outreach and the Wolf Education and Research Center in Winchester, Idaho. You don't want to miss our summer celebration this year. It's going to be an exciting time, so make sure you mark that on your calendars. It's going to be a Friday and a Saturday, June 12th and 13th. And make sure you get your spots. The spots are going quick at Winchester Lake State Park. So go to our website at wolfcenter.org. That's www.wolfcenter.org. And make sure you pre-register and select those spots before they go. It's going to be, like I say, an exciting time. We're going to have our keynote speaker this year is Casey Anderson from National Geographic. A lot of you might have seen his programs on TV like America the Wild or Expedition Wild. And you might even know his best friend more than himself, which is a 700-pound grizzly bear named Brutus. So make sure you come on out. You're going to hear him talk about some of his amazing experiences filming wildlife and learn a little more in depth and get a glimpse of what it means to be wild with Casey Anderson. We're also going to be bringing Western Wildlife Outreach out to our summer celebration as well. And we'll be talking with them here very shortly and kind of get a glimpse into what summer celebration is going to be like, learning more about wildlife, large carnivores, why they're important, and what we can do to ensure that they have a future for tomorrow. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Western Wildlife Outreach. Western Wildlife Outreach promotes an accurate understanding of large carnivore heritage through education and community outreach in Washington and Idaho. Founded by Chris Morgan over 10 years ago, Western Wildlife Outreach focuses on providing educational outreach and tools to help the community better understand how to live with grizzly bears, black bears, cougars, and gray wolves that are returning to the states here in the Pacific Northwest. Their information-rich, high-quality brochures, pamphlets, posters, PSAs remain a central part of their outreach efforts to people and communities existing with carnivores. They also continue their successful approach of meeting individuals and large groups alike to provide science-based, educational information on bears, wolves, and cougars. Be sure to check them out at westernwildlife.org. That's www.westernwildlife.org.
All right, with me on the phone right now is Western Wildlife Outreach. They're based in Washington. So I don't know if you guys like to introduce yourselves real quick.
Hello, Radio Wild. This is Lorna Smith. I'm the Executive Director for Western Wildlife Outreach, and our primary focus is helping people to understand the biology, ecology, and kind of the truth behind living with large carnivores.
Hello, Radio Wild. This is Daryl Smith. I am a wildlife biologist. I function as a science advisor for the organization, Western Wildlife Outreach. And I've been doing wildlife and fisheries biology for about 40 years now. So I volunteer mostly for the organization. And we have fun connecting people with carnivores. And that's what we've been doing for the last 4 years with this organization.
So what is Western Wildlife Outreach? You kind of touched a little bit on it, but would you guys like to go a little more in-depth with it? Lorna, I don't know if you could kind of explain how it started and what it maybe, you know, the process of where it's come from and where it's going.
Well, our organization was actually founded almost 15 years ago by a prominent bear ecologist, Chris Morgan. And Chris these days has gone on into the world of filmmaking, and he's also a frequent host of Nature on PBS. So Chris has stepped back from his lead role in the organization, but is very much still involved. And I've been the executive director for the past three-some years here. Our organization, you know, has grown from an original focus on restoring the grizzly bear population in the North Cascades, still a very important part of our work, to also include outreach and education efforts around gray wolves, black bears, and cougars in the Pacific Northwest. We really want to help people understand how these carnivores live out their lives, get people to understand that there's really very little to fear in terms of human safety, but we also give them some tools to work with so that they feel even more secure either living or recreating in country where there are large carnivores.
Lorna, this is Chris, and I'm curious, why did you change the name from Grizzly Bear Outreach Project to Western Wildlife Outreach?
Well, the organization changed its name from Grizzly Bear Outreach Project to Western Wildlife Outreach right after I took over as executive director. That was a decision that the board made, and it was to reflect the expanded focus of the organization away from that single species focus of grizzly bears to, as I said before, the other large carnivores. The issues are rather similar among those species. People often have unrealistic fears about, you know, what would happen to them if they were taking a hike in country where they knew bears, wolves, or cougars, you know, were living. So, you know, the safety issues, the kind of unrealistic fear issues are very similar, and they are all carnivores. So that, you know, that made sense to expand the message.
So, Daryl, what does Western Wildlife Outreach mean for the local people that you're reaching out to, considering now that you are expanding your reach to reach more of the different carnivores in their area?
Well, like Lorna said, noted just a moment ago, issues are much the same. So whether we talk about grizzly bears or wolves, or the issues are very similar. They're the large animals, and mostly they don't have a good perspective on safety. People don't realize that almost 400 million of us live here in North America, and there's an average of only a death and a half a year, and we read about that. So that's much of the message we try to get out to folks. And oftentimes, and so to answer your question directly, we try to supplement like the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Wildlife Service folks, who oftentimes are preoccupied with mechanical things on the ground. So we try to come in and mechanical things on the ground, like dealing with problems. They just don't have the personnel to do what we do. And we do it with energy, and we do it with gusto. So we bring we have a bear trainer, which is belongs to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We contract them, and talking about bears allows us to talk about all the other carnivores as well. So that means that we give folks a pretty fast response. If a neighborhood near Seattle, for example, or anywhere else in the state has a problem with bears getting into trash, or they got questions about gray wolves, we can be there usually within a couple of weeks, spend some time with the folks, answer questions. Most of the time, just talking about safety alone puts people at ease and opens the conversation up. Try to put that in perspective.
So, Lorna, what are some of the biggest challenges that Western Wildlife Outreach faces? I know Daryl just kind of mentioned a lot of them right there, but more specifically, you guys are working like this last week. You were in some meetings, if I understand correctly. What are those challenges, and how are you working with those?
Well, it's an interesting time in the carnivore world in the Pacific Northwest. There are some major issues on the front burner right now. One of the things we're very excited about is after about 30 years of talking about it and not having it be a large priority, restoring the North Cascades grizzly bear population, which is a very at-risk population, has finally reached the front burner for the federal agencies. So just very recently, a couple of months ago, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Park Service got together and with the cooperation of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife are now beginning the process to prepare an environmental impact statement that will examine a variety of alternatives for restoring that at-risk population in the North Cascades. So the scoping out the issues to address in the environmental impact statement, that public comment period has closed, and now the federal agencies will go away and prepare the draft environmental impact statement based on what they heard during that scoping period. And while that's going on, we're very actively out with the bear trailer, out with our speakers bureau, talking to people about the North Cascades grizzly bear and also about the environmental impact statement process and how they can become involved in that. So that's a big issue. And, of course, at the same time, gray wolves returning to Washington is also a big issue. Ranchers in eastern Washington, northeast Washington in particular, have concerns about what that might mean for their ability to continue business as usual with livestock out on the range. The Department of Fish and Wildlife has recently expanded their wolf advisory group and brought in Francine Madden, who helped to kind of mediate between different interest groups on large carnivore issues. So she will be part of that process, helping the department with outreach efforts. So those are the two big initiatives underway right now, and not forgetting cougars or black bears, which are always kind of ongoing issues for us. We recently partnered up with King County Bear Smart, kind of took them under our wing because they're doing some great work out in the Issaquah Plateau area where there's a lot of bear smart and improper garbage storage issues that need addressing.
So the carnivore world is sort of bursting at the seams right now with activity here in the Northwest, and we find ourselves in the middle of it.
Daryl, how do these species behave near populated areas compared to areas of wilderness?
Well, there is much less interaction than you might think. We, in the last several years, agencies have been able to put a variety of haulers on carnivores, on gray wolves, on cougars, on grizzly bears, although not in this state. And we found some pretty astounding things. We find that cougars, for example, which people never see them, cougars are where deer are. And deer are on the periphery of most populated areas here and or in the middle of them, like Lorna and I have deer on our front yard. For their deer, there are cougars. Folks don't really know that but because they don't see them. But we know that because we have the collars and the collar data. Lorna and I actually take walks around our own neighborhood here. We live on the Olympic Peninsula, which has a very good population of bears, black bears. And we see bear sign very, very frequently, and of course, that depends on what time of the year you're out. Right now, they're bear in their lowlands. What we're finding is that they're very good neighbors, cougars and black bear, and gray wolves, which are the most misunderstood of and least dangerous of all the large carnivores by a long shot. We now know from scientific data going back 150 years. So these animals live on our periphery, They live where we have green belts. If you have forest in your backyard, they live in that forest. Of course, that's a tiny part of their whole range. And they're very good neighbors. In this state, we've only had one death ever. We've had about four or five attacks, and one actually, which happened in the last couple of weeks on the Fort Lewis Reservation. And we had one death by a cougar, and that was 60 years ago. So by emphasizing this kind of information, we try to allay people's fears and also put all of this carnivore-human interaction into some kind of realistic framework. Yes, they live around you. It's very unlikely you're not going to see them. They're very good neighbors. And true danger is much less than you might think. And if you ever actually encounter an animal that doesn't back away or disappear before you even know it's there, you let people know how to act, what to do, how to, for example, not to run away, which is what food does.
We don't want to become food, that's for sure. So
that's right. Unfortunately, it just doesn't happen.
How would people, for those that maybe are afraid and would be inclined to run, what can they do to when they stand their ground?
So we tell people initially to stand their ground. So normally what happens is this. Normally the animals sense that you're in the area. They have much better senses than you do. They have four bare feet on the ground. Oftentimes they can even feel you walking because we walk fairly heavily. But they use all their senses, and then they'll usually disappear. In those rare instances, when the animal doesn't disappear, we just tell people to face off, look them in the eyes. That's changed over a period of time. We've told people previously that it's threatening if you look a predator in the eyes, and you don't want to threaten them, but that's actually what you wanted to do. You actually want to show some force. So you look them in the eyes. You, if they don't leave, then make yourself look large. That can mean throwing your hands up. You can shout at them if you'd like. And if that doesn't work, then you can slowly walk away, back away. But in almost all cases, standing your ground, facing the animal, making yourself look large is all you need. In some cases with black bears that are habituated to trash, they won't be aggressive, but they might not want to leave the trash, the garbage pail. In almost all those cases, there's no actual aggression. It's just the bear is standing its ground because it knows that you're going to back away. Then it's time maybe to call in Department of Wildlife, for example, here in the state has got Karelian bear dogs, and they'll come out and they'll do what they can to harass those animals, catch them if need be. So, there are panoply of things to do. Main thing is stand your ground, show your dominance over the animal, back away if the animal doesn't leave, and then you have other avenues if this becomes a chronic problem in the neighborhood.
Daryl, I have a question that's specific to cougars, and as you know, there's been two lethal managements of cougars in Bend, Oregon, and I don't know if you've followed that, but I'm curious, in a lot of our discussion at the Wolf Center, in talking about non-lethal management of species, is it truly realistic to relocate a cougar, and or are there facilities that would take an animal, or are there better alternatives to dealing with cougars who come into residential areas and are hanging out in trees above children's playgrounds?
You know, Chris, I'm not completely familiar. I've heard peripherally about the incidents in Bend. What we see mostly is that we see that people oftentimes will shoot cats first and then ask these questions later. And that's what we don't like to see in general. Animals oftentimes will tree as soon as people show up. They know it's safe, and that isn't really threatening. And cougars don't drop out of trees on people. They don't drop out of trees on deer or anything else. Cougars need a stable platform. If they were to drop on top of the deer, it rolls over, and the cougar breaks ribs, and the cougar can't hunt for 2 weeks, and it dies and starves. So a cat in a tree is not a threat, by and large.
And in addition to that, in Washington and California, cougar incidences are handled differently, I would say. And what we've found out is that if there is a cat that is hanging around, you know, a school ground or has been seen in somebody's backyard, the best approach, first of all, is to get people and, you know, dogs away from the animal and give it an opportunity to leave on its own, because that's a very likely outcome. Cougars don't hang around in one place unless they, you know, are on a kill. They might stay around for a few days, but cougars move around a lot. So in Washington and California, mostly they set the stage to let the cougar leave on its own. And then if it doesn't, in Washington, they do try to tranquilize the cat, capture it, and move it elsewhere. And then they do use the Karelian bear dogs to do what we call a hard release and harass that cougar as it is released. So it gets a lesson, you know, people and dogs are something to avoid. And that's been a very successful program.
Yeah, and to go on and answer your question further and elaborate on what Lorna just said, and my discussion earlier with carnivores, is that you need to give these animals an avenue for escape. For example, if you walk into your garage and there's a black bear in your garage, don't stand your ground there. Move out of the way and let the black bear out. When cougars, actually most of the cougars we see like this are usually younger cougars. They're dispersing. They don't have a territory yet. And by and large, they are responsive to relocation. So, and many of those animals won't survive anyhow, because it's a pretty tough world, you know, being a carnivore. But by relocating them, we at least are able to give them a chance, and the results are usually pleasing, in that nobody's hurt, and the cougar gets buttoned off into the wild somewhere. And remember this: if you get the wildlife folks involved, and the wildlife managers, the professional carnivore managers, generally the outcome is the best ever going to be. So I don't know specifically what happened in Bend, but what often happens is the local police or something who aren't, you know, have jobs and they're not and part of that job is not actually carnivore management, will shoot a cat. Certainly not a thoughtful outcome.
Just as a follow-up question, I think that, you know, in our work we try to promote a sense of stewardship, and it just seems logical that lethal management is a last alternative, and that's something that we're pursuing. But in our ability to articulate what the solutions are, I think it's very difficult to suggest that there are facilities or alternatives that could become a potential home for that cat. And lethal management, I think, is by far the most affordable solution in the short run, but potentially disastrous in the long term.
We have we had a discussion actually with one of our bear and cougar management specialists in Washington State, actually several of them, and these are the folks that have the Karelian bear dogs, and they do their best to find homes for especially orphaned, but you're right. We can't expect all those animals to be shepherded off to some kind of secure zoo or sanctuary. Well, no. Sometimes lethal management is called for, but we think it's wise, as a carnivore biologist for many, many years, and carnivore biologists like carnivores, we think it's wise to look for alternatives and not turn to lethal management right off the bat until you've looked at all your other cards. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense, and something that falls in line with a good sense of stewardship, and something that we're pursuing a greater understanding and participation in. So we're glad you guys are on the front line of that narrative and promoting those solutions, which is a huge part of the future of the Wolf Center, as you know.
We do.
So moving on, just have a curiosity, and I think Lorna, I want to direct this question at Daryl, but I'd also like you to weigh in on it after he's given you the signal. But does knowing behavior of these species help to prevent conflicts?
Yes, very much, very much, especially when it comes to livestock management. For example, you don't let your sheep go out into the woods at your home farm. You try to manage your livestock differently. With bears, you manage your garbage. Everything that a bear does during the year is geared towards food, towards getting more food. That's an animal that has to make weight by the end of the year. It doesn't gain 100 pounds or whatever it is, and it might not make it through the winter. That's part of why we're here, actually, is to tell people about carnivores, give them a knowledge about them, so that we can better live together. One of the things that you have to bear in mind, too, is that the most, if you were to look around, you know, the most dangerous thing in your vicinity is your automobile. Automobiles kill thousands of people, and I already mentioned earlier that all carnivores combined kill about 1.5 here in North America. But the issue with automobiles is you know about them. You know, not to step in front of an automobile. You don't open the door and step out while it's still moving at 20 miles an hour. So we're not fearful, by and large, of automobiles. We're cautious, and we know how to be around them. So same thing with, in a different manner, letting people know about carnivores, then we've dispelled the fear, and we allow people to appreciate those magnificent animals. That means that we can actually live together, and that's a good thing.
So I would just add to what Daryl's saying that certainly all of our solutions to human and carnivore conflict center around, you know, that particular carnivore's behavior. And the main thing that we address with humans is avoiding and managing for attractants. And when we say attractants, it's almost always food attractants, whether the species, you know, is the black bear, grizzly bear, cougar, or gray wolf. You know, wildlife is out there living on the edge, having to, you know, make a living day to day. They're looking for easy sources of food. For gray wolves, that might be an untended sheep flock if they happen to, you know, bump into it, and there's, you know, lambs for the taking. That, frankly, doesn't happen very often because wolves are very intelligent, and they know that livestock often means people are around, and they're far more accustomed anyway to living on their natural diet of ungulates, of deer and elk. However, that occasionally happens, so we work with livestock owners, large and small, to practice good husbandry, which is, you know, fencing and range riders and livestock guardian dogs, and then, of course, in neighborhoods, getting people to manage their garbage, not putting it out on the curb before the day of pickup. Just sensible things like that, managing animal, you know, domestic animal food, not having livestock food out where it could be an attraction. And, of course, for people who are out camping in black bear or grizzly bear country, knowing how to store their food and garbage away from their campsite so they're not attracting, you know, bears into proximity with humans. These are just common sense things that we're out there telling people, reminding people, always trying to keep in the front of their minds. So we also do try to put things in perspective so people realize that, you know, when they're going out into the woods, their first concern for safety shouldn't be running into large carnivores. They need to be prepared, you know, to deal with cold conditions, wet conditions, possible getting lost, falling off of a cliff. All these things are way bigger risks, and people just need to be prepared for all kinds of eventualities venturing out into the outdoors.
Yeah, that's for certain. Being out in the outdoors, it's, you know, it's beautiful. It's wonderful to just experience it, to have the opportunity to be close to nature. But, you know, a lot of people, they realize, you know, they're in the wilderness. They do take those precautions, and they know the dangers. And I think it's great that you guys are out there educating about the predators and the carnivores that are, so that they actually have an understanding of that.
And I also want to talk a little bit about the area that you guys work in specifically here in the Northwest. Is it just you two specifically that work, or do you have other people that help in different regions? And would you mind kind of just explaining kind of a snapshot of your reach?
Yeah, one of the reasons, one of the ways that Western Wildlife Outreach can be very effective is that we have part-time staff throughout the region and a good cadre of volunteers. So that is something that we have to offer that, you know, the agencies that we partner with, you know, can't provide. Often with agency cutbacks, they're not even able to have people out in the evenings, on weekends, and with our combination of, you know, part-time staff and volunteers, we can cover a lot of ground. So that's how we're able to be as efficient as we are and have the reach that we are.
Well, and I'll also add to that that one of our other initiatives is actually to train a local conservation district. And the land grant university here, the folks, the agricultural extension at Washington State University, they're the people who actually are front line on the small farm front here. So there's a conservation district in every county, and most counties have also an agricultural extension unit from Washington State University. And when you're talking about livestock, livestock management, that's a big issue. Livestock, as Lorna mentioned earlier, are potential carnivore attractants. What carnivores eat? Fortunately, most carnivores very quickly get a sense of what they shouldn't be going after and what's acceptable. And we find around here that cougars stick almost exclusively with deer, but don't bother llamas and sheep. Just a few depredation incidents a year in our own region here. But so we leverage our own reach by training other folks on these same issues. We produced some material, some informational sheets on how to fence and how to use something like fladry, the term for hanging flags on wavy flags on fence these kinds of things. Actually having a person out on the range with your livestock, if they're free range, makes a huge difference to find out. So we get the message out by leveraging with everybody that we think might have an interest in this issue.
That program that Daryl just described is a program that we unfortunately no longer have current funding for, which is a situation we'd really like to address. So it's a very valuable program, but we're not able to get it out on the ground very much right now because we do need funding for that. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, and it's an important thing. If you're listening and you feel compelled, definitely see what you guys can do. What areas do you work in here in the Northwest? Are you, you know, strictly Washington, or do you work in Oregon, Idaho, Wyoming?
Our on-the-ground activities right now are primarily in Washington and up into northeast Idaho, where the Selkirk grizzly bear recovery area is. But we have also just recently started expanding our activities down into Oregon. So I would say we are looking to expand to cover really the Pacific Northwest, which we think of as, you know, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, where there are similar carnivore issues to address. And then we also partner with other nonprofit organizations with similar missions in Montana, Wyoming, where there are, you know, again, grizzly bear populations, and we all need to stay on the same page in terms of what's the latest science and how do we address the issue of avoiding conflict with humans and large predators.
So we've enjoyed a recent fun partnership with Chris's here. We're in the same roughly small circle, those of us who are carnivore specialists and who are interested in carnivores. just like we, Western Wildlife Outreach now talks about issues that extend to all the large carnivores. Those of us who are in the carnivore world, about carnivores in the Pacific Northwest, have a lot of common ground.
Yeah, I think that the future for all small nonprofits like ours, and we're very similar in our educational focus as opposed to some that think that we're about social or political causes. It really has risen to the surface for me at the Wolf Center that we need to lead in education and let other organizations do the boycotts and pickets and such. But with doing so, you know, on the front lines of education, you know, there are certain things that we teach about, and one of them is the recovery of various species. And it begs the question that, Daryl, all of these species except perhaps the cougar are making a comeback, but what does the future hold for grizzlies in the North Cascades, the Bitterroot, the Selkirk areas, and then maybe some commentary about wolves and cougars as well? What's the future for these species?
Well, Lorna talked about our optimism now with the onset of this new environmental process. And again, we've been talking about this with grizzly bears here in Washington State in the North Cascades recovery zone for almost 40 years. Started to do something about it. So, and thank goodness, grizzly bears are long-lived, or the population may have winked out here. So the future here in Washington State, in the North Cascades, which is, we're not just talking about the national park, we're talking about the recovery zone, which is that area from Interstate 90, the main freeway arterial here in Washington, all the way to even north of the border. Our recovery zone is 10,000 square miles, and it's approximately the same area as Yellowstone National Park and the surrounding recovery zone. We have fewer than 20 grizzly bears in the North Cascades region. We have 600 in the Yellowstone region. In a study a number of years ago, as part of this whole long process, an environmental study shows that we have habitat here in the North Cascades region for at least 400 bears, habitat and food. So, but the North Cascades is different from other regions, and even because in the Selkirks and the Yellowstone area and all those other regions, if you're on the ground as a bear researcher, let's say, carnivore specialist, and you can point somewhere in Yellowstone or in even the Selkirks or the Cabinet Yaks, you can walk there. Here in the North Cascades, it's very, very rugged vertical terrain, wet, steep, lots of old forest, lots of rock, and we find doing some black genetic studies, we find that it appears that the North Cascades is segmented in a way that the other populations aren't. The areas is harder to get to. It's harder for the bears to travel between them. So we're optimistic here for grizzly bears in the North Cascades. We just went through a process, a public comment process, and at a meeting here just 2 days ago, the National Parks and Fish and Wildlife public involvement folks reported that they had, after a series of public meetings, they had about 4,000 comments. I think that's what it was, right, Lorna? And,
yes.
And among those, out of those comments, they had a 79% positive response to grizzly bear recovery, and very few form letters. So lots of thoughtful comments. And so it appears that we hope this points to our some of the work we've been doing, raising awareness of grizzly bears, pointing out that they're not monsters, they can really add quality to your wilderness experience, just knowing that if you've got grizzly bears, means that you really have a wild area. If we elect to augment the population here and bring in a few bears, it'll take us 50 to 100 years to recover the population. The real issue right now, another real issue, are gray wolves. Gray wolves, unlike grizzlies, do reproduce rapidly. So we've got some pretty good populations pretty quickly. What's baffling to us is that the issues with gray wolves are all political, in my own perspective, and Lorna's perspective, and for most of us who deal in this arena. They're by far the least dangerous of all the large carnivores. I think we've had three deaths in all of North America since we've been writing this stuff down, and it'll be 100 years. 400 million of us right now in North America, or something like that. So the threat isn't what we think it is. The threat is, you know, we're all still relating to fairy tales. We haven't had wolves in 70 years, great wolves. And in Washington State, they've chosen to come into the most politically conservative area in the whole state. And by the way, they have come in on their own four legs. In Washington State, we have gray wolves coming from the Rockies, and we're also seeing a significant influence, a number of wolves coming from the Great Bear Rainforest in British Columbia. A 600-mile walk for a wolf. These are animals that are that were historically here, as far as we can tell. Our genetic studies give us this information. Forage on the beach. They know how to eat salmon. Black-tailed deer specialists. In our Cascades, the preponderance of our genetics and of our wolves seems to be coming from the Great Bear Rainforest. We actually just 2 days ago, a female, black female gray wolf was killed just a few miles east of Seattle. It was hit accidentally on Interstate 90. So the future is interesting. Will we let these animals actually have a future? That's your job, and that's our job too. If we're at a point right now in the world, we manage everything. People do. So animals only actually will get to exist if we allow them to do that. So guess what? That puts us on point. You know, those of us who give information, scientific information, just have to do the best we can to educate people about these animals. And we have a fairly short period of time to do it in.
Definitely. That kind of leads me to our last question here, and I want to open it up to both of you, but I'll have Lorna, if you could answer first. What would the Northwest, or any area really, but the Northwest, what would it look like in the future if we don't have programs like Western Wildlife Outreach or the Wolf Education Research Center, or working strong to try to make sure there is a future for these species?
We feel that people want to save those things that they know about, those things that they are brought to appreciate, and because a lot of people in this modern day world don't have direct contact with these large carnivores. They largely live out their lives in the wilderness. It's up to us to bring the awareness of those animals and their needs to the population. So that's what we do a lot of with going around with the Northwest Bear Education Trailer, our other outreach efforts, and, of course, what a new center like you're discussing, Chris, would also provide is an opportunity for people who may never see these animals in the wild to get an appreciation for them, to understand the role they play in the ecosystem. Without that kind of outreach, we could easily lose these large carnivores. They're really only allowed to exist in the landscape by human tolerance, human understanding, and human tolerance. We eradicated many of these large carnivores before to the real detriment of the ecosystems that they live in, and we're only really now beginning to fully appreciate what that means. They play an essential role. And it's important to keep them there, and we just keep working and finding ever, better ways to get that message out.
Well, Daryl, did you want to add anything to that? Or
I think Lorna actually encapsulated it very well. People don't want to save things they don't know about, and they don't want to save things if they're fearful of them. We're in a position to do right now, nonprofits, small nonprofits like us, do what agencies can no longer afford to do. Everywhere we go, Folks are laying off staff. We walked Fish and Wildlife Service office in Lacey, Washington here, and offices are vacant. So the agencies don't have the money to do this, and they also have political constraints when it comes to messaging about animals. Now, we are not advocates. We don't walk the political arena. I don't know a carnivore biologist that's carnivores. There's a great deal of science coming out right now, which needs to be interpreted. And science is very kind to carnivores. And I think it fits very, very, very well in with humans and are willing to spend time, like Chris and Chris's organization, to talk about these issues. There's a big hunger for that kind of knowledge. We bring our bear trailer out to a neighborhood or a Earth Day celebration, and we're busy all day. People like bears. People don't know about wolves because we haven't had very many on the landscape. We poison them out. So there's a big hole for this kind of information dissemination. The challenge is financing a message, how to get out there and reach these people.
Well, Daryl and Lorna, we've run up on the time constraints that are part of this program, and I think that the fact that we've run out of time is abundantly clear that there's just so much to talk about, and we'd like to invite you back to talk again in the future and maybe continue this discussion with us and maybe give us some type of a quarterly update on where you're going to be speaking and presenting. And of course, we want to remind everybody that they can see you on June 12th and 13th in Winchester, Idaho at the Wolf Education Research Center's Summer Celebration, People, Place, and Purpose. And we're excited that you're coming over to Idaho to teach alongside us. And we know you're making a great contribution to this subject and these efforts for a greater understanding. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with our listeners and just some encouragement or something that you want to share that is would help people find you on the website?
Well, first of all, I want to say thanks, Chris, for having us on, and also just how much we are looking forward to. We're very excited about future partnerships and collaborations with the Wolf Education and Research Center. It's exciting that our missions, our goals, what we're out to accomplish are so very similar. So I think it's a great fit. And just a reminder that people that might want to reach out and help support our efforts, we can be found both on Facebook, but our web address is just www.westernwildlife.org.
Or bearinfo.org.
Correct.
To reflect our initial roots with the Grizzly Bear Outreach Project. So, no, Chris, we've just really enjoyed our conversation. We had a great deal of fun when we were down there in Portland and Beaverton. We're looking very much forward to getting back to my old stomping grounds, actually, near Winchester, and it's going to be one of the highlights of our summer for us.
Well, awesome. I'm looking forward to actually getting the opportunity to meet you guys as well, coming in this for summer celebration. So, thanks again for taking the time out of your day to talk to us about the Western Wildlife Outreach and the work you do. Awesome work, and we'll look forward to our next time.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was Daryl and Lorna Smith from Western Wildlife Outreach talking to us today about the issues regarding large carnivores here in the Pacific Northwest. Well, that just about wraps up our show. Thank you for tuning in and listening to it. We really appreciate it. Please share and spread the word about Radio Wild to your friends and family. Be sure to check us out on the first Monday of every month, where a new and exciting new Radio Wild broadcast will take place. Today's episode was brought to you in part by the Wolf Education and Research Center and Western Wildlife Outreach. We'd love to hear from you, so if you have an exciting, cool, and a wonderful story about wildlife, please email us at info@wolfcenter.org. That's info@wolfcenter.org, and perhaps we'll feature it or read it here on Radio Wild. Until next time, folks, we'll see you then on the first Monday of each month for another exciting episode of Radio Wild.